The Educated Climber Podcast.
The show for arborists, tree climbers, and entrepreneurs who make their living in the canopy.
Climb high, work smart, read more.
What's up, Climber Nation? Tree Mugs here. Today on the podcast, I am joined by the one and only X-Man, David Driver. David is an absolute pioneer in this industry, super innovative, super knowledgeable guy. This has been a long time coming. David is actually the very first person that I reached out to when I started the podcast last year, and it has just taken that long to figure out the logistics and figure out a time and get him on the phone. So I am super excited about this. I'm so glad we could make this happen. In this conversation, we talk about David's backstory, how he got into the trade, where the X-Man name came from. We talk about climbing redwoods with Jerry Baronic, David's amazing crane setup that he operates remotely as the climber in the tree, which just boggles my mind. And then we delve into the backstory of X-Rings. So where X-Rings came from, how he brought them from the marine industry into the tree industry, and then all of the pushback against them, both on the professional side to get them accepted by actual tree people, as well as the pushback on the business side and all of the adversity that he had to overcome to bring rings to the market. So this was an amazing conversation. David is such a smart and thoughtful guy. I could just talk to him for hours and hours. So I know you guys are going to love this. So without further ado, please enjoy my wide-ranging conversation with David Driver.
Hey, Patrick.
David, what's going on?
Well, finally getting a chance to talk to you. It's been a long time coming. I know you've worked hard at trying to set this up, and I'm glad we're finally doing it.
Yeah, man, absolutely. You were actually the first person that I reached out to when I started the podcast last year, and I've been trying to set this up ever since, so I'm really excited to have you on.
I was wondering how long it was since you started. Sorry about that.
No, I think I tagged you in the, well, I know I did, in the very first post on Instagram when I announced that I was making a podcast, and I tagged you, and you responded. You're like, what is this? It looks like a microphone. Like, what are you doing? So then I had to explain
right.
The podcast.
Yeah, that's right. And then I asked around about you a little bit, and
okay.
Then August is like, no, he's a good guy. He's done a lot for Jerry Baronic, and he's a really good guy. I was like, okay, I'll do it sometime.
Awesome. Thanks, man. That's good to hear.
Since then, I've definitely listened to your podcast.
Okay.
I haven't gotten an app on my phone yet. Mm-hmm. What I do, I've just gone to the internet on my phone.
Yep.
And it's really easy while you're, you know, if you're raking or working, you know, not having to really think about what you're doing, you can play a podcast. I do it like with Ash Injections this summer, and I just play it on through my Bluetooth speaker. But I'll have to look into these apps or something that you talked about.
Okay, I can explain that at the end. Yep, it's already built into your phone. Cool. So, listen, before we really get going here, I just want to thank you for all of the innovation that you've brought to the industry. I just feel like X-Rings and the Safe Block have fundamentally changed rigging for the better. And I just see it as a really generous act to, you know, to put yourself out there for the benefit of countless people in this trade. So first of all, I just wanted to say thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. I feel like I'm just getting going. But it's hard when you're on a tree service and have a family, and then you also try to do products. So it's amazing. Times is flying so fast. It feels like you're in some weird twilight zone where just bam, 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 years are just flying, and you're like, oh my gosh, it's already, you know, whatever, 4 years have gone by.
Yeah.
And I haven't even put out a full video on the Safe Block yet on how to use it.
Yeah.
Like that. It's just, oh my gosh. but, yeah, so, yeah, that's, with the most simple things. I have a lot of products that I think of when you come across like a problem that needs a solution or something that's irritating mm-hmm. while you're working. And I just like to solve problems, and especially and sometimes it's even hard to even notice that, you know, something that's always been done, it's hard to even pick up, hey, this could be better. And then, but once you realize there's a problem or something to be solved, sometimes I can just can't stop thinking on it. And then I get it down, you know, written down on paper. And once it kind of even gets solved on paper, then I kind of let it go a little bit. And then come back to it again. Some of them just get scrapped over the years, and the other ones just like, as you go along, it's just like, yeah, this thing's definitely a really good thing to do. And I do have a bunch of those I wanted to do.
Nice.
The rings was just a real, real simple one since I was borrowing it from the marine industry.
Yeah. Okay. No, I love that. You're very creative, very innovative. I love one of the things that I most love about where the industry has gone is not so much inventing new things, but taking things that are used in other disciplines, other areas, other trades, and applying those, bringing those over. I love that concept. I think we could do a lot more of that.
Yeah, you're right. It's weird how when some people find out that something is used somewhere else, you know, half the people will get mad about it. But other half is like, oh, good. Good for you for figuring that out, that it's good for our industry too. But it's,
interesting. It is. Yeah. okay. Well, why don't we start with your backstory? How did you get into this, this trade?
Okay. So my parents had 9 kids, and
wow.
One of my older, yep. And it's not like that's 9, you know, it's not like 2 families put together or any divorces or anything like that. It's just my parents, Catholic family, had 9 kids.
Yep.
And I was second to the last of the youngest. Mm-hmm. There's one younger. Anyway, my older brother, Mark, had a tree service and still does, but he had a tree service in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 15, in the summer and stuff, my mom was like, your brother needs help, so you go help rake up. He needs help with his business.
Yep.
So my younger brother and I would go. My younger brother was like 14. He's about a year and a half younger. But we started raking up jobs, helping him out when I was 15. And so all through school, high school, even sometimes the days after you got home from school, my mom would drop us off at his job site and we worked. And it wasn't really, never even thought about being a choice. It's just like, yep, he needs help. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
So I worked for him for a long time, and he was, got a pretty good name in the area. He did a lot of big technical stuff, and you know, even loggers or other people would ask him to come in on something mm-hmm. that they were unsure of, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was really neat to watch the stuff that he did, and I thought, well, that'd be neat to call him and do that someday.
Yeah.
But anyway, we worked like dogs. We worked like slaves, and when it was time to go, when I graduated high school in 92, I was kind of burned out on tree work. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to go into law enforcement.
Okay.
So I went to Frostburg State for a year. And I did well. It's a 4-year university. I did well the first year, but just taking that year off away from tree work, I missed it, and I thought, man, I like being outside, I like everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my mom, I really like to do something with trees. And then there was no internet back then, but somehow she found ISA, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
wrote them a physical letter saying my son wants to go into tree work, maybe his own business or go in with his brother. So it's not like a for a resume, but where's a good college he could go to for like hands on and get to learn a lot more.
Okay.
And they were like, "You got an excellent one in your." They wrote back and said, "You got an excellent one in your state. It's just a 2-year program. It's back then it was called Allegheny College of Maryland. No, it was called Allegheny College, and now it's called Allegheny College of Maryland. But anyway." And they had a great forestry program. I went through the forestry program. It was a very intensive program, very hands-on. It used to be geared toward harvesting and logging and all that and growing timber. But the jobs, when I went there, they were the jobs in that and, like, working for, like, Department of Natural Resources, they weren't really out there, so they were starting to gear more toward urban forestry.
Okay.
When I went. And they even had a climbing class.
Nice.
But it was really intensive. You even had to do a summer program where all of the students did logging and harvesting, and they did every bit of it. The plan, the load logging area creation, build, you know, bridge if you had to for the skidder over little streams.
Nice.
And students cut everything, and basically the teachers just stayed around and tried to keep you from getting killed. And they rented big skidders. We did everything. We skidded everything. But anyway, it was a good program. I'll move on for now. It's really good.
Awesome.
And it's gotten better over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my best employees have come from out of that program.
Okay.
Whereas I've had some from 4-year universities, and they know a little bit, a lot. It seems like the 4-year programs. I had one from Purdue, one from West Virginia University. But they didn't really have hands-on skills. So anyway, it was pretty cool, that college. So when I graduated from there, and that's about 3 hours from where I grew up.
Okay.
When I graduated from Allegheny College of Maryland, while I was going there, I had met a girl, and she wasn't willing to leave that area, Cumberland, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a Appalachian Mountain area. And I was like, well, shoot, all right, I guess my brother wouldn't let me climb much when I worked, because it was always go, 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 go. He didn't really take the time he wanted to, and he talked about it, but I didn't have much climbing experience because he was just trying to be productive and get stuff done.
Yep.
So I thought, well, I need to work for a tree service out that way. She's not willing to move, and I wanted to stay together. So I searched for a tree service to work for, and it didn't have really any good options, but I was like, well, I got to do it. And I tried at first to drive like an hour and a half away to Bartlett. And I had bought a really junky, rundown house that I was trying to fix up.
Mm-hmm.
It had been vacant for a while. The pipes had busted, everything. I bought this house for $12,500.
Nice.
So I was trying to fix this, make it livable, and then I was trying to commute. And when they say, we'll hire you, but I don't think this commute's going to be able to do it. I think you're going to find out it's too much.
Yeah.
And I put in like one or two days, and then the other days were raining, so I'd call them like early in the morning because before my drive. I was like, well, if you're going to cancel work, I kind of like to know now instead of driving an hour and a half and then an hour and a half back. So, and finding out that and everything, and then I was like, yes, you're right, not going to work. It's too much of a drive for everyday work. Anyway, then I took on a local company there, and so I have a college degree. I have some climbing experience. I have my own climbing equipment and chainsaw. I came to this company, and they had a lot of employees. They were pretty big. And he agreed to hire me, and I think it was for $8 an hour.
Nice.
Right. Now, this is our dollars have been inflated over the years, but this is still pretty bad pay back then.
For sure, yeah.
And I was like, well, you know what? I can take it for a while. I'll show, you know, how my work ethic, because we worked so hard. And I was just like, well, I'll show them how I work, and then we'll talk about money later on. I said, let's, all right, let's like maybe review it in 2 or 3 weeks. And he was like, yep, sounds good. And I started working for him, and I was kind of like a, supposed to be an apprentice climber. There was an older guy that was a climber, had been there for years.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came time to, and he, they use bucket trucks a lot too, but when it came time to backyard trees and rigging and climbing, he would get real nervous about stuff beforehand. You could see he was really bothered by some trees, and I was like, well, and I'd be like, well, why don't we set up a line over there and then here, and then it'd make it safe and this, and then he'd be like, well, maybe you want to just do it, and I was like, oh, okay, and so I ended up just a small time I was there. I don't know, it was maybe 3 weeks or something. I ended up climbing a whole lot, and he wasn't. I wasn't learning anything from him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, I gotta talk to this boss about getting paid more, and I'm really like struggling with, should I really stay there or not?
Mm-hmm.
Because like I had little odd jobs for people, old ladies, you know, putting up fences for people, just different little things, and just that made you more money than working for $8 an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the other thing was I was afraid that the crew's working mentality was just going to destroy me after a while, because I'd never been around people that just try to put in time in the day and get hours.
Yeah.
It was always being productive.
Yeah.
Is what I was from. And if the boss wasn't around, they'd take cigarette breaks all the time and this and that. And, They didn't like me a whole lot, because I was like, I just keep working by myself. I keep dragging brush myself. I keep felling trees, whatever.
Yeah.
And they would all be taking breaks. Yeah. And they're like, sit down, man. Sit down. Take a break. And I'm like, no, I've never worked that way. I don't want to. And
yeah.
And so I think the last I talked to the boss and said, I need to, let's see, let me think what happened. I was really troubled by it. And we were doing this really steep job on a mountainside,
mm-hmm.
hopes. And there was these electric lines way down at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was climbing all of these trees and topping them out so they would fit in this lot and not hit the electric lines.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a bulldozer there dragging them up. And then the homeowner, and we thought we were done, and then he wanted a couple more trees done. And the guys were taking a break out front. And I looked at this tree, and this was the day I was really troubled about, should I stay with them or not?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at this tree, and I was like, yeah, it'll fit in there without having to take the top out of this one. This one's really far up the hill. And I cut my notch, and it was probably it wasn't an open face. It was probably just a traditional, or maybe it was a little narrow.
Yeah.
And when I cut the back and it hinged over, that sucker shot way out.
Mm-hmm.
When it popped that hinge fibers, it just soared like an arrow through the air,
mm-hmm.
and took out these power lines at the bottom.
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I walked out front, and I was like, oh, we got a problem. And the head climber walked back there, and he's like, oh, yeah, that's a problem. and then I met with the boss. I said, you know what it was? It was only 2 weeks, because you get paid on a two-week period.
Yeah.
And I said to the boss, I said, you know, I was really troubled about staying here. That was on my mind a lot, and I was thinking about talking to you about pay, and I'm so sorry that this happened. This is going to be expensive, I'm sure, with the insurance and everything. I said, it's not enough, but just keep my 2 weeks of pay. Don't pay me that, and let me know. I'll have to contribute more.
Yeah.
If I can. And he was like, no. But he was like, look, you work hard and everything, I can pay you more if you stay on. And I was like, I don't know. And I said, well, I need I said something like that. I would need at least $10 or $10.50 an hour.
Yeah.
And he was like, I can, it was something like, yeah, I can go 9.25. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, I said, I got a college degree. I'm doing most of the climbing. I really need paid more than that. And he's like, nah, we'll go 9.25, okay?
Yeah.
And I was just like, and I said, well, I guess I got to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And he did like a double take. Like, he wasn't really looking at me. He did like a double take. He's like, what? I was like, well, I guess I got to leave. And he's like, you're leaving? I was like, yeah, I can't work for that. And I guess he had never had people say that to him or something. It was odd.
Yeah.
I was like, sorry, man. And so then we went our separate ways. I've seen him at expos and different things and say hi to him and talk to him. There's no bad feelings at all.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just started doing tree work on the when I could here and there, and I was actually helping old ladies, you know, hang up mirrors and pictures on the walls, putting fences up, mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but right then in 1995, right after that was, I got my tree expert license also. Our state required, I think it was the first state in the U.S.
Oh, nice.
I think it was back in the 80s that required a tree expert license to do tree care, tree trimming,
oh, okay.
and things like that.
Okay.
So right out of college, my college degree really helped me pass that test easy.
Mm-hmm.
It was all set. I knew it was such a breeze.
Yep.
But I have a tree expert license, so then I said, well, I'll start my own tree service. And I call it Arbor Experts
mm-hmm.
Tree Service. And then the logo on the back, we had Arbor written over a big letter X.
Okay.
I just thought the X for experts. So that was 1995. And we did everything, a whole lot of rope rigging. And till this day, I have never owned a bucket truck. And I really enjoyed rigging. I think in 1995 or maybe 1996, I bought a Hobbs device, a big lowering device.
Yep.
I always thought, and you know, if it's going to be for work and you're going to be using it a long time, don't buy piddly little stuff if you can help it. Try to get real high quality stuff.
Yeah.
And not having to replace that and have things break or wear out is going to be the way to go.
Yeah, for sure.
I've always been with that motto.
For sure.
So anyways, I had the business out there in the mountains of Western Maryland for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where I'm from, back eastern part of Maryland, big family, like I said, and lots of friends and connections. But I stayed out there, and I was actually the girl I talked about. We actually got married for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I worked like crazy. It's just a three-man crew, and I was the main climber. And, you know, I'd get home at dark, eat something, get a shower, walk into office, and return phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much till 10 o'clock every night.
Yeah.
One day she didn't come home and said, I'm not coming home tonight. I'm going to stay with my parents. I thought that was weird because nothing had happened or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the next day she just like, came over with her parents. I thought this is weird. They stayed in the car. I was like, what in the heck is going on? And she was like, I want a divorce. And I was like, what? It's never come up before. There was never any talk of needing a counselor or anything.
Wow.
And I was just like, oh my gosh.
Crazy.
So, but it was hard. It wasn't an easy, we weren't getting along real good or anything like that. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I felt it was kind of miserable, but anyway, enough on that. So anyway, well, shoot, that's the only reason I was in Western Maryland.
Yep.
I have 8 years in a wonderful customer base. The cost of living is really low out there, but I still work really hard for little, you know, not much money.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? It took 3 years to get really busy out there. I said it's going to be a lot less time to get it going again back. I got divorced and moved back home to Harford County, Maryland, and started up the same tree service there. In the meantime, I didn't really like the real long name Arbor Experts Tree Service, so we shortened it to Arbor-X.
Okay.
Same logo from the beginning. And then, within only a year and a half, I was really busy with plenty of work.
Nice.
And a lot more connections, a lot more family, and it was just, I was way happier. It was really nice. So then an interesting little change in my career was probably in 2002, I was like, you know, I ought to go do something fun. I always thought about, you know, seeing the redwoods.
Yep.
And the internet was out at that time. You could search for things. So I searched for climbing redwoods, and this guy's name, Jerry Baranek, kept coming up.
Nice.
And I found an email address for him for his books or something.
Yep.
And I wrote him. And I was like, hey, my younger brother and I want to go out climb redwoods. Maybe show us some. And I didn't expect to ever get anything back.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, yeah, it sounds good. Why don't you come on out? We're going to get together at just Redwood River Resort, you know, whatever it was, in several months. And I'll show you some big trees.
That's awesome.
Wow.
All right. Nice.
So 2003, my younger brother Matt, which also has a tree service as well, very successful tree service. He goes in like big, huge equipment wise, always has. Single doesn't have, you know, it's just himself. So he doesn't mind going into $1 million debt probably. Just have really nice stuff and blow things out. But anyway, met Jerry and been friends with him since. Great guy. And we climbed trees at this resort. It has mature redwoods. A new owner had taken a resort, and Jerry had become friends with him and kind of said, you know, you can kind of maybe have some more revenue coming in by having tree climbers maybe in the future come in and recreational climb these trees. Meanwhile, we'll climb them, and we'll trim out dead wood and stuff.
Nice.
And we'll sign up saying that it's not liable and all this.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time going up a tree SRT,
okay.
2003. Because it was such a long ascent before your first limbs. I mean, it was like 110 foot to your first limbs on it.
Wow.
And they had the slingshots. I don't think we knew about the slingshots back then, the Sherrill Tree Big Shot.
Yeah.
So we discovered a whole bunch of things that way. Because then they had these red CMI ascenders that they had converted into handholds.
Okay.
Bars.
Mm-hmm.
And then more bars for the ones on your feet, but dog leash, dog collar straps to hold your feet on them.
Okay.
And then right in the middle, they would use a Gibbs ascender back then in case the top ascender popped off, which is a darn good thing they did. but there wasn't anything to rappel down with, thinking back on it. Going up.
That's what I was going to ask.
I guess they would have to try to, I don't know what their basal anchor looked like, if they could add another rope to it and some wraps and lower it down, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But my first tree I was going up, the SRT line went past the limb and was kind of leaning on it pretty hard, this big limb.
Mm-hmm.
And as I tried to push the ascender out and past it, the ascender popped off and I fell backwards. And the Gibbs at my waist held me.
Oh,
but
wow.
I fell, like, totally unexpected, fell backwards, bent over backwards, and I, you know, I just had a orange, like, peltor hard hat at, you know, about chin size, so it fell off, and I was just like, oh, my gosh. No.
Wow.
I'm glad they have some backup. Because I didn't know that, I had never seen an ascender. I didn't know that they could come off like that.
Yeah,
or
really? Wow.
Anyway, and then once we did those trees, and the first day, he's like, He said, you guys do good. I just wanted to see how you were on these trees. And then we went and saw an even bigger one.
Nice.
But anyway, that's when they learned that night in the cabin. They showed us these short crusted cords and a pulley to push it up.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, it was double rope, but we had never seen a pulley. I was just climbing with a metal snap with using the tail off the snap.
Oh, okay.
To like a four foiled. I never used the Blakes. I used this odd four coil prussic.
Okay.
That is really slippery.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody, all the people that would try it, were like, this is dangerous. Not, I don't, you know, this moves too much. But I liked in the trees where I would swing to another tree and just barely get your hand on a sprout or something or mm-hmm. limb, and you're trying to pull yourself. It was so slippery that if you didn't set it real tight when you transitioned like that,
mm-hmm.
you could get both your hands on the next tree and just pull hard, and it would start slipping and give you and feed
oh,
you.
Oh, I see.
So yeah. It was. I really liked that for a lot, a lot of my career.
Yeah.
But anyway, and those guys that were climbing with us were like champion tree climbers. And I didn't even know there was competitions back then or anything.
Yeah.
And they were like, do you know about tree buzz? This is 2003. I was like, what? No, what is that? And they was like, oh, it's a internet site and a forum, and you just learn a lot on there.
It must have just started at that point.
I think so.
Yeah.
It was either 3 or 4 we were out there doing that, 2003 or 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got back home, I got onto there. And I was like, wow, this is really neat. There's so much information to search. And I was on there pretty much probably almost every day, every night.
Yeah.
Every night from 2000, say, 4 until 2015.
Wow.
I mean, just about every night.
Yeah.
And to get on there, you had to log in and have a name and password. And almost everybody at that time, way back in the beginning, had like an alias name.
Yeah.
That nobody was using their real name. And I was like, okay, that's what you do. Okay. Mm-hmm. What am I going to call myself? And then I was like, well, I know. When I was working in Western Maryland, this one neighborhood we'd go into that had a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
The kids loved it when they'd see our trucks rolling because they're going to see some neat stuff. And they'd run up the sidewalks and go see a bunch of setup. And then the parents told me one time, they said, oh, the kids just love it when you guys come in. And they're going to see some neat stuff. And they call you guys the X-Men.
Nice.
Because of the X's on your shirt. And the first X-Men movie had been out, mm-hmm. I believe. And they said, they call you the X-Men. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So then when I joined Tree Buzz, I was like, oh, I'll call myself the X-Man.
Nice.
And that's where that came from.
That's awesome.
And that's the kids, you know, kids helped me come up with that. So
yeah.
That's where that came from.
Yep.
And then I got away from Tree Buzz in 2015 because of honestly with being angry about things that had happened to me with the rigging rings. And mm-hmm. we can get into that
yep.
a little bit.
For sure.
We'll get into sort of the rigging rings, but I got away from that because it was just, and I feel like I just had less and less time all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting older and didn't feel like staying up extremely late and all that. So,
mm-hmm.
but anyway, yeah, that's my background. Sorry, it's a little yeah. long.
No, that was awesome. that was awesome. Yeah, I was a huge Tree Buzz junkie for probably 3 years there as well. That place was just unbelievably important in the development of so many people. It was such a place for learning and growth and sharing for a long time. I mean, it's dropped off a lot these days with social media. I think a lot more people are spending their time, you know, on Facebook groups and Instagram and There's definitely fewer people on Treebuzz than there was even a couple years ago, but it was definitely very, very important. Yep.
Yeah.
Now those redwoods that you were mentioning, was Jerry actually climbing with you guys?
He was.
Nice.
That day we were climbing, he took the owner of the resort up in the tree with him for the first time. The guy had never been in a tree ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, he set him up and went up with him beside him and, was getting him even more interested in it. The guy did great, but,
awesome.
Jerry was definitely climbing at the time. And then, and then after learning more about him, then I bought some of his books and he was doing, PCIe expos, for a while too after that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with his posters and books and so forth.
Yep.
I'm sad that one of my big poster of him, all of the, his autographs are faded away so much you can barely read them. might have to get him to go back over it again or something.
Yeah,
but the photographer was also there that took that picture of that topping of felling the top out of that huge redwood.
Yep. Yep.
That was an interesting
story
with that. I remember one funny, not saying the subject too much, but the photographer guy that came out to film from another tree. Jerry told me when I think was getting ready to cut the back, and then the photographer, I forget his name right now, I'm sorry, but he was like, "Hey, Jer." And Jerry's like, "Yeah." He's like, "You sure that thing's not leaning my way a little bit?" He's like, "It's not, don't worry." But yeah, you know, he's sitting there idle, waiting for action, and he's thinking, "Oh my gosh, that top could hit me if it came my way."
Yeah, really?
That was something with, and it was all leading up to, and their whole area was knowing that Jerry's going to take this tree down that hasn't been able to be taken down for so long. And, Jerry walked out of a bar or walking into a bar, and a real old timer tree guy, logger, I think maybe even climber, came across Jerry in the parking lot. And if I get it right, because it's a little bit of time, but he said, took his pointing finger and touched Jerry in the chest. He said, "Jerry, you're going to die in that tree."
Really?
And Jerry's like, "Oh." And the guy walked on. And he was like, "Oh, my gosh."
Wow.
So that had to mess with him a little bit while he was doing the work, I would imagine, because somebody with a lot of experience and skill just flat out said, "You're going to die."
Seriously. That's crazy. Oh man,
so,
that's awesome!
And then he came to one of my sites in 2008 because I had a whole bunch of trees on top of this cliffside, and I had to set up this steel cable because it's such a long speed line. Set up the steel cable speed line to get these trees down. So he came out for two or three days and filmed with his nice cameras this speed line job, and he threw it up on. I think it might be one near one of his last videos he put up on his YouTube page. I think he named it Speedline Wizards.
Really?
So that was
I've never seen that. Huh?
Yeah, check it out.
I'm gonna look that up.
You know, he was using a lot of music that, you know, wasn't barred any copyrighted music. He was using stuff that was allowed. So
yeah.
The music's a little off, a little weird, but Speedline Wizards, check it out. It's
okay. Okay, I'm going to do that. That's amazing. So you actually, you learned SRT climbing from Jerry Baranek himself.
That is
awesome.
I forget some of the other guys' names. I think Greg Louie or something, and Jesse something else that was out there. I know they had some champion titles in some of the tree climbing competitions at the time.
Yeah.
Those guys showed me. That's how they were getting up the redwoods. You didn't want to use double rope that long of a spectrum. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So now you said back to your backstory. When you said when you moved back closer to where you were born, that's where you started ArborX again. You started it fresh in a new location.
Started the customer list all fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
But the business, you know, was already set up. But yes, correct. That was 2000.
Okay.
So yeah, 1995 started it, and then in between there, I morphed the name a little bit, just ArborX. Then 2000 started in Bel Air, Maryland, and then been going ever since. Big changes this year for a change. That's 24 years of being in business, and always with employees. And this might be a subject for another podcast months from now. But basically, as of August 3rd of this year, I decided I'm never going to have employees again.
Really?
Yeah, I'm worn out on it. I'm done with employees.
Yeah.
So now I do small stuff solo, and all the bigger jobs I bring in insured contractor, even if it's just one person.
Yeah.
But I get a certificate of insurance first, and then I definitely need to spend like a year on this to have a good opinion of it. We'll talk about, you know, maybe a year from now.
Sure.
But yeah, it's neat. Get a small business owner in or something that he knows he's in his little bubble and he's not going to learn much more because he's the top guy. But he's, you know, he's got a year or two and three, you know, owning a business.
Yep.
He wants to know more, but he's got to get out of that bubble. So, you know, I have a guy that drives an hour and a half to me, and he basically stays on the ground and helps out, but he's picking up stuff from me.
Yeah.
So I'm getting a smart worker that can use a saw and chipper, and he's picking up little hints and things along the way. And then on bigger jobs, like I said, my brother Matt has so much equipment. You know, I'll have him come in with his Takeuchi excavator with a rotobent grapple and big 1990 chipper, or 2090, and help me blow through a lot of material. And that's wonderful too.
Okay.
But it's there's hard things. Like I got to make some changes to be able to clean up a yard of debris faster. I dislike raking a lot.
Yeah.
And if it's just yourself raking up a whole yard, that's pretty awful.
Yeah, for sure.
One of your podcasts on was it about hitting a wall? What was it called? This too shall pass.
Yeah.
I didn't really connect with that within a tree too much, but right now with raking a whole yard or picking up 40 or 50 alternate mats by yourself.
Ooh, yeah.
that's like, I go into robot mode and it's like, it'll end. So just keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm entering a new whole era on how to, do more things efficiently myself. I'll be getting more equipment and different things to help me do that. So it's kind of exciting because I like challenges, like solving challenges. So there's definitely a whole new way of thinking about things.
Definitely, I like that a lot. Actually, that's a pretty bold experiment, I would say. So I will take you up on that offer for sure. We'll check back in maybe in a year's time and see how that went.
Sounds good.
I forgot what I was going to ask you. I got into your story there. I thought you. I thought you used to have like a big crane. Was that you who?
I still do. Okay. I have a Palfinger, well, not big, but I have a Palfinger knuckle boom crane.
That's what it is. Yeah, a knuckle boom.
So way back in 2000. 2006, I was so backed up with work and not liking to see an expression on customers' faces when they accepted the work and you told them how long it was going to be.
Yeah.
It was like, it was 10 to 12 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Usually. And they're like, oh my gosh, but they, you know, a good customer base, they would do it. But I was like, I got to research some way to get jobs done faster. I hadn't owned a crane. The Toypen, if that's how you say it, the man lifts, the track lifts, it just like come out that year.
Yep.
And that was a new thing. And then I checked into prices on that, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of money just to lift somebody in the air.
Yeah,
I can go to the backyard. And then I was like, wow, well, look at these knuckle boom things. It's like, oh my gosh, that they have man baskets for them. It's your crane. The rest of the truck is useful. It can be a log truck.
Yeah.
It can haul. I was like, oh. And then I met so I was like, I like to research a lot if you're going to buy an expensive piece of equipment.
Yeah.
And, I mean, traveling around and spending a little bit of money on travel and meeting people, that is nothing compared to getting into debt with a big piece of equipment, the payments you're going to make. You better make this thing as close to perfect as you can by researching.
Yeah.
It's unreal, some of these guys that buy stuff that just think, oh, and they don't even research. But anyway, so I traveled around to people that had knuckle booms. And one a fire department that I met that had a knuckle boom, they had a hook lift system where they could change the beds.
Mm-hmm.
This was a specialized truck to go to accidents or fires or anything. And depending, it was so cool, they had different containers.
Oh, okay.
One with like a trapped person in a car rescue. Another one is like hazmat. Another one fire.
Okay.
Whatever. They had multiple containers and they could change beds. Mm-hmm. And it also dumped like a dump truck. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Wow.
That really seems like it. I could have my log truck. I could haul my skid loader. I could have a huge chip body. And I have my crane all in one. And I just ran the figures and all that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that makes so much sense for mm-hmm. me.
Yeah.
And I came across Mike Poor, was the climber and running the remote from his side. And I was like, whoa, I really like that. It looks a little scary. I don't know. I was like, that seems a little crazy, scary. I don't know. And then after about a year of researching at different times, I decided on what I wanted built. You know, in the very beginning, I was like, I'm used to regular stick cranes. I never owned one, but we rent a crane, and you're always using cable, cable up and down to do things. And I thought, I want a cable on my knuckle boom. And when I researched and met people, they're like, you're never going to use it. And I was like, what? He's like, no, it's fast. The boom is so fast, you're not going to be using cabling up and down.
Yeah.
Not unless you're doing like manhole work or in an elevator shaft, you're not going to be using a cable. I was like, really? And I was like, and I've always been a person where, even if I don't believe something and I want to do it my way, if people that are wise suggest something and then multiple, then I go ahead and do it what they say.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't do that. They have to find out the hard way. But I've kind of always disciplined myself in life to do what the wiser people say, and it works out.
I like that.
I did. Had that truck built. It took a lot longer because of the international. Took forever to get the truck in. It was a big ordeal that way. But the crane dealership, Westminster Hydraulics, did a wonderful job on the truck, and I got it in service, started using it September 2007,
mm-hmm.
toward the end of the summer 2007, and on the first day I went down and took a tree down it didn't need to be down, but I was like, called up a neighbor's farm and said, hey, you got any dead trees or something out on a field that I can just mess with? And they're like, yeah, go pick one out. And I took down like a dead ash and then extended out to my limits and saw, just learned everything. And then I called up a fabricator friend and I said, I know you got that huge dead white oak next to your building. I said, mind if I set up my truck and I'll just take it down for free? And I just want another tree to do today.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yep. And because that first tree, everything just made sense to me. It just clicked right away.
Yeah.
All these toggles that you run, it just felt right, and I felt really confident. When I got on that white oak, a couple times I went a little little too fast on the movement, mm-hmm. and it was so brittle that things would shake off of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I dented my cab on the first day of using it because I shook a dead end off. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And that's the only dent I have on the truck still today. It's that first day of using it.
Nice.
But I was the climber and ran it from my side, and I fell in love with it.
So you're saying like it's a remote control on the crane? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Really?
Correct. There's levers down on the crane that you can manually use as well, but it's a radio signal, and I carry it like a person would carry a pocketbook on their side, strap it over your shoulder.
Okay.
And I have it on my right side, and pretty much in very little bit of time, I even memorized where all the toggles were, so I don't even have to look at the remote usually.
Nice.
So I'd send myself up in the crane, and I rappel down, hook up the crane straps.
Mm-hmm.
Now I tie into the tree,
mm-hmm.
and get off the crane, and I, tensioned the slings while I was up there to make sure they were all right. I like the things come off really balanced. If I can do it.
Yep.
I strive for no movement at all.
For sure.
And then I tie into the tree, and as I make my cut and I'm watching that curve, I adjust my boom up, down, left, right if I need to, so that when I finish the cut, there's little, if no movement. And you don't get things right all the time, but always strive for being really smooth on that. And I think it's the way to go on knuckle booms, for me at least. I thought it was really easy, and I thought when something's kind of easy for yourself, it's hard to understand that everybody's not the same. So I was telling people for years it's the way to go, and it's easy. And then guys would get knuckle booms, and they would try it, and then I'd run into him a year later. He's like, David, it's awful. We can't be a climber and do it at the same time. And I was like, what? And they're like, no, there was way too many things to think about, way too much going on. We don't do it.
Oh, definitely.
And I haven't. I don't know of anybody else that does it besides.
Yeah, I can't.
Mike Moore, myself, and I think and Mark up in New York. Allmark tree.
Okay.
But Mark does a lot from the ground now, I think, but he used to be the climber and do a lot in tree. That boom is so close to you, or at least mine is. It's close to you a lot of times in the tree,
mm-hmm.
and they move so fast. I would hate to have somebody else on the controls and me that close to it, where they push the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And could just squish me against that tree.
Yeah.
And apparently that's why Mike had gotten into doing it himself, because he had a crane almost smash him, or maybe did or something.
Oh, okay.
I love it doing it that way. And right now I'm entering a new idea with that. It's been 2008 was the worst rainy year forever for my area and all of it. Broke records.
Yeah.
Our normal rainfall is around 30, 40 inches a year, and we got 72.
Wow.
In 2008, there was only a span of the longest span in the entire year of 2008 of no rain. The longest span was 11 days.
Wow.
So all of my big jobs were, I priced it as driving a crane or trucks across a yard to get to the back or get into the, from the neighbors. So many of those jobs have just been waiting for dry ground.
Yeah.
I was hoping to do one this week that the guy accepted the work on April 21st. He accepted the pine removal in the back. And he's the next job on our list to do. And I'm waiting for frozen ground. We got a little bit of frozen ground last week on Monday, but not just like the first inch or two.
Yeah.
So I was able to extract a fallen pine with my rubber track loader,
mm-hmm.
and it did fine on the ground most of the day. Actually, it took me 3 days to do it because each day warmed up and I had to cease what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's just been so, it's an awful year. But what I was getting into was, since I'm a adequate climber and I don't really need a grapple saw, I thought the first purchase I should make to my crane right now to help with solo work is these electronic choker bells for logging operations.
Okay.
So you got the, I was not into logging, you know, on mountains. So my terminology might be wrong, but like a yarder or something that pulls the cables and pulls logs up mountainsides to the
landing
staging area.
Yep.
They have these radio controlled heavy duty bell chokers, like a choker you would have on a skidder.
Yep.
But these guys pop open when you touch a button on your radio remote.
Really?
And I was like, and this is the third generation one, so they've really gotten the bugs out of these things.
Yep.
And they're made for terrible, harsh, muddy conditions, getting smashed by logs. Mm-hmm. Super heavy duty, amazing piece of work. But anyway, I got to thinking, wow. You know, on crane jobs where there's plenty of room to lay material down in a yard or something, in a lawn, mm-hmm. And I'm dismantling the tree by myself anyway in the tree. I'm the crane operator and the climber. But I always need somebody on the ground to untie my slings.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wow, if I got this choker bell and had another remote on me, I could actually lay all the limbs and brushy tops and brush out in a yard,
yeah,
without having to come down at all.
Yeah.
And then my logs, when I get down to the logs, they can go onto the bed of the truck.
Yep.
And I can release them and put them on the truck. And then my tree's done. I can drive the knuckle-boom truck with the load of logs to my office, to my home.
Yep.
And then get the chip truck and chipper and come back and then chip up all the limbs. So
wow.
those choker bells are expensive. That one bell that I'm holding in my hand right now, I think it was $4,500.
Wow.
For one of those. And the radio, I got a short distance radio remote like the workers would use if they needed to make it on, like the yarder guy up top would have a far reaching radio receiver.
Yeah.
But the workers would have these short distance ones if they needed it to unhook. They just, so it's a far enough distance that far enough for me to use on a job site. So that radio remote was like $1,300. But
wow.
That amount of money, it's pretty small, you know, considering versus a grapple saw that you'll have $25,000 on.
Yeah.
And since I'm able to climb and do all that, I thought this would be the way to go right now. And then a step up from that would maybe be a grapple that goes through all the movements of a human hand, but no saw, so that way it's lighter.
Okay.
And I was actually working on going to have one like that built, but I was told that Mechanil makes one like that also without a saw, so it's a lot lighter.
Okay.
And that way I could just grab in the middle of the limb, the balance point, and but anyway, this choker bell is very exciting, and I've had it probably a month and a half, 2 months now, and I haven't done a single job with it. It's been too wet still.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
That is that is absolutely fascinating to me. Just the concept of being the climber and running the crane at the same time, like that's just mind-boggling to me. When I was doing my apprenticeship, it would be 2009, 2010, I was the we had a knuckle boom, a little knuckle boom on the back of a log truck where I was working at Norm's Tree Service, and that's what I did. I drove that truck, so I was the operator of the knuckle boom, and I absolutely loved, like, I love knuckle booms. They're so fun to work with. And this was a small one, but I can't even imagine the complexities of being in the tree, making the cuts, and running the crane all at the same time. That is fascinating. Like, I could do a whole podcast episode on just that. That's so cool, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some other people thought it was interesting too, and I did actually do two different years. I did PowerPoint presentation at TCIA Expo on that truck and how I worked.
Yeah.
And I saw somebody else years ago at one of the winter management things, and he's like, "Oh, you look familiar." And then he's like, "What do you do?" And I explained. He's like, "Oh yeah, I remember you doing a presentation on that knuckle boom." And I was like, "Yep." He said, "Oh, I remember thinking that guy's got some trust issues." And I was like, "Huh, that's interesting." But I thought about it, and I like to, you know, try to better myself. You know, if somebody says something, analyze yourself. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know what? No, because we do rope rigging with massive logs with the ground man. I'm basically, my life's almost in his hands.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
At least, and with the size stuff that we were getting into for years. When that log comes off, I'm totally trusting him. To not make a mistake. So I was like, I don't know if it's that. I don't have anybody that could run that crane. And I think I'm the best one for it. And it's not scary at all when I'm doing it. I like it. So
that's,
but
awesome.
Anyway,
I love it.
So,
okay. So that is like, I love that idea. But I think we could talk for probably 8 hours. But why don't we get into rigging rings? Like over the years, including on Tree Buzz and stuff, like I've heard a lot of rumors, I've heard a lot of stories, but I've always wanted to know directly from you, like, what was the actual story of rigging rings? Like, how did you get the idea? You know, what did it take to bring rings to the industry? What were all of the hardships? I know there was a lot of pushback against them. What is the story with you and rigging rings?
Okay. All right. So like I said earlier, we're always into a lot of rope rigging, enjoyed it a lot. And I think at the end of 2010, beginning of 2011, one of the ideas I was working on was actually going to build an ultimate extreme, whatever, lowering device, a basal lowering device.
Okay.
And it was probably going to be so expensive that hardly any of them would be sold, but I kind of just wanted it for myself. Mm-hmm. So in looking for components for that, I was searching all kinds of different rope things to make this extreme rigging lower device. And then, so I would just, when I find a decent company, I would literally just go through every item, look at every item. And when I came across Antal Marine, Italian company that makes stuff for sailing, I saw these black rings, and I looked at the sizes of them, and I was like, "Whoa, actually, that could use maybe work for redirects." So I was always into a lot of redirects in my rope rigging.
Yeah.
Witnessed my brother doing big stuff over the years. There was a lot of natural crotch stuff, which can be done right, actually.
Yep, for sure.
And but a lot of times his main rigging point was a pulley block. In our industry, a lot of times people call them blocks, and a lot of people call them pulleys. So sometimes I say pulley block, just put the two words together. So
yeah.
People don't confuse. But anyway, I was always into using a lot of redirects. Well, I owned a heck of a lot of pulley blocks. And that was a lot of money, in hardware, and, you know, other tree services or crews, I mean, they usually just had one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and they don't have anything else for redirects then.
Yep.
And using the tree's structure to try to make that raking point stronger and everything.
Yep.
So I was like, oh, let me look into these rings. And I just, I didn't contact the company or anything because I wanted to check them out. And I thought right away, hey, these are going to get probably too hot. They're going to end up melting the rope, and it's okay. Not going to be a good thing. But mm-hmm. let me buy, I don't know, I bought like 10 of them. Mm-hmm. The largest that they had, which is a 28 by 20. Mm-hmm. And then the next size down. And luckily, my guy, Matt Delamont, co-worker, climber, he could splice. And at the time, I was using a lot of AM Steel Blue on my block slings.
Yep.
That was real big at that time.
Yep.
Because it was such a strong rope, and it was just exciting. And so I had him splice all these rings to AM Steel Blue. It's a Dyneema. And we used them for a whole year.
Okay.
And because I don't, anything new, I've always not liked when somebody gets something and they almost do a review within the first 2 weeks of having it or
yeah.
day of having it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you don't know yet. You need to test the time.
Yeah.
And so I, we used them for a year, and I wrote the Italian company, and I said, look, I got a proposal. I said, these rings should be in my industry. I, you know, explained mm-hmm. what I do, mm-hmm. and they really should be in this industry. I think they don't get hot. They're just wonderful. I know you don't know anything about our industry, and it'd probably be scary to get into it because you don't know about it.
Yeah.
So I think, how about I start an arbor supply separate company from my tree service.
Yep.
And I get insurance on my products, and I will be the sole person on, you know, promoting this, mm-hmm. educating people on it, and backing it up with my insurance.
Yep.
So if you're willing to do that, could you print on the rings what I would ask you to put on the rings?
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote back. They said, yep, we're totally interested in that, in working with you. But we would like you to continue to communicate with the North American distributor.
Okay.
For North America. And it'd be a lot easier because they speak English and all that too. So they directed me to Euro Marine. They're in New Hampshire or Connecticut, somewhere up New England,
okay.
East Coast of the U.S. And a wonderful husband and wife team. Probably some of the best bigger business owner I've come across in all of this,
mm-hmm.
For as far as integrity.
Yeah.
And I'll explain why. So I asked them to put on the rigging ring, you know, X rigging ring, because mm-hmm. I was so active on Tree Buzz for a lot of years that I was known as the X Man, and I just put, you know what? And then the Arbor Supply Company, which I've never had time to actually sell to individuals. It was mainly to protect myself and get have a company name for insurance. And anyway. And I don't know, sometimes I get time wrong, but probably 6 months of getting rings in with the X rigging on them, I said, hey, we really could use a way bigger ring mm-hmm. in my industry than you guys have ever made. Would you be interested in making a bigger one so that it's a wider area and even bigger bend radius for... so we can go into bigger weights and bigger ropes.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, what do you have in mind? And that's when I gave them the dimensions of the beast-sized ring
yeah.
That I didn't name the beast, but it was kind of cool. On YouTube,
Yeah.
named it the beast, and it stuck. But so they made that larger ring, that really large ring, and things were. I was going. So that was 2011. I used their rings, and then 2012, we got it stamped, printed with my stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2012, I decided, all right, how is this? This population is vast. How are we going to get this out there? It's a wonderful product. So it's not like a little trendy thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think it just got to get in the hands of people, and it'll do good.
Mm-hmm.
So I rented a booth at the 2012 TCI Expo, and you know, just did it all myself. I had rings on display and spliced up rings. Back then I was using got in touch in Kentucky with ABR at the time.
Yep.
I think that came with Anchor Bridge Rope was the name. I think it was from a patented adjustable bridge design or something.
Oh, okay.
That somebody created.
Mm-hmm.
But ABR just does tons of, they were doing tons of splicing for all different kind of companies.
Yeah.
And I felt okay once I talked to them. And so I would just throw out ideas. Can you, because I wasn't a lot of splicer, I say, can you do a triple? Can you do two on one side and one over here? Can you do, you know, two headed ones? Can you do ring on each side? Can you do, and they had the two head splicers there were just really excellent. And they would give me samples of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I would use them, but I also took a trip up to New York to a company that makes crane slings and huge cable things, and they have a giant brake test machine.
Okay.
And Mark, he's a friend, but I never had known how to say his last name. The All Mark guy with the knuckle boom.
Okay.
He's the one that gave me that contact of a that crane company, the brake test machine, said they'd be willing to take on this job of breaking all these slings. And they allowed me to be in there and allowed me to film with my GoPros.
Nice.
Everything, one sling didn't break right. It was a triple sling. The one with locking Dremels, one of those didn't break at the taper like it should have.
Yeah.
And just that one mess up, I was like, no, we're not doing that one. We're doing the one with the straight berries, the Dremels straight berries. And anyway, then they did an expo and it was a huge hit. It was pretty cool. I would have a crowd, such a huge crowd of people in front of my table at the booth that it blocked the traffic of anybody going by. They couldn't get through. It was pretty cool. And then you had some weird people that were just extremely negative mm-hmm. about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one guy, it was 2012 and 13. The area in front of my booth finally cleared up. Like nobody was there mm-hmm. in this, I don't know who he is to this day, just kind of a thin, smaller guy, came like fast walking around a corner and beelined right up to me.
Yeah.
And he was like, you're telling me these things are okay to use with double braid rope? And I was like, yeah, what do you have somebody use all the time with them? What do you mean? He said, well, double braid rope, it gets its strength from the core and the cover. And you're just gripping the cover on these rings. And I was like, okay. And he was like, so you're telling me that these things are safe to use in double braid rope? And he did, his name tag was off.
Yeah.
He must have been around the corner talking with a whole bunch of other guys. Like, yeah, we're going to get him. We're going to get him with this one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, and I just stared straight at it and said, Yes, there's C.
it.
And he walked away. And I got thinking about it. I was like, gosh darn. I was like, well, come on, man. Thomas, how are you? I'd never thought somebody, he got me, I was surprised. I was just like, if he had come, if I knew that something like that would happen, I would have been like, how do you handle weights that are heavier than your human ground man? Don't you put wraps on a porta wrap or some other device that uses friction? Isn't that double braid rope touching a hard surface? What's the, it's just like, it's so weird with the common sense stuff out there in the world that this is just, I don't know, it's just ridiculous. And I did lots of, we did, a lot of, before they went out there to the public, I did brake testing at what I could do at my property with, I don't know, I take the top out of a tree, build a plywood stand where we could keep putting a log on top of the plywood stand with the crane and dropping logs where with ton of slack in them, on purpose to break ropes, which
Okay.
it was very surprising how much it took to break a rope. But what I needed to break ropes, I needed stuff to break,
Yeah.
and I wanted to see if a single ring would be the location of a broken rope or the sling break or what. And I wasn't using brand new ropes. I was using our rigging ropes that we were, had rigged with for whatever, 2 years with or something,
Yeah.
or more. And so they had a lot of use, and there's parts of the rope I'm sure that were weaker than others. And one of the now every massive drop, and it makes you like cringe when you see the stuff coming off and yanking. Oh, it just makes your shoulders go up. Oh, just because you have to usually have like 25 feet of slack,
Really?
with, and we did different rope sizes, but mostly 3/4, because I wanted the fatter rope versus the ring width. And all that stuff's on film. And my friends like Lauren Schultz and others, they've been telling me years, bring that stuff out. They always call my hard drives the vault. So I have tons of hard drives. And they're like, come on, bring some stuff out of the vault, man. I was like, I know, but it just takes so much time to do a video on it. It's just, what
Oh,
movies I do.
I would love to see
It,
that.
so,
Yeah.
and I mean, and by now, those are all older GoPros, and the resolution is crap compared to nowadays.
Okay,
But
yeah.
yeah, it's there's good stuff on that. And anyway, what I was getting to was one drop. We had 3/4-inch rope. When it broke, which we were trying to break, it broke at a single large rigging ring one time. And I was like, ooh, okay. All the other times, it was cutting, the rope was getting broken at the knot.
Okay.
And my knot was always, if I remember, my knot was always a half hitch and then a running bowline
Okay. Yep.
on the log. And so you take the diameter of rope on rope, and you get the squishing effect and some movement. Come on, in your whole system, that's going to be your weak. That's very likely going to be your weakest point, unless your sling is really, small, and of course, you're almost doubling the force there. But if you have adequate sling on your rigging point, the rope on rope at the tie is going to be, often 40 to 50% rope strength loss. That's where they're going to break.
Was it
If you get,
when you sorry, when you say it was breaking at the knot, do you mean the half hitch or actually at the running bow?
I would have to review the videos.
Okay.
I can't. It was. I know it was at the tie, but I don't know if it was.
It must have been the half hitch, I would
I
assume.
don't know. You
Yeah.
would think it would be half hitch, but I'm kind of thinking it was. Sometimes it was the running ball.
Okay. I want to see that
I would.
footage, man.
Now I'm kind of interested in seeing that.
Yeah.
So,
Okay. Good.
So, and with the such negativity of a new product coming out, and it's unfortunate, but if there's people in high places that are linked to other products, and there's something coming along that might diminish those sales, and they can have influence in the industry, and it might sound like I'm just some weird conspiracy, maybe I am, but I don't, but there's a lot of manipulating out there, and holding other things down from progressing. So what I ended up doing was, like, these things are awesome, they got to get out there. So I did 2 years of expos, which the booths are not cheap. And now, coming from Italy, I had to buy pretty good sized quantities for them to even run batches with custom lettering on it. I think it might have been 200 of each ring, maybe it was 150. But they also usually would take 3 months to get them to me. So I had to anticipate sales a little bit, and I think the first batch went well, and a lot of it was given away because I just got to get in the hands of people if I want this to, if I want to see it catch on in my lifetime. So I would send out slings to people. A lot of times I'd ask them for a dollar or something like that. I didn't give them to you, but I'll sell them to you for a dollar. I was like, look, just be truthful about anything. You don't even have to show them. No pressure at all. I never wanted to feel like somebody got something for free, so they need to talk about it. I can't stand that. People tend to do that anyway. The good-natured people, they get something. Unfortunately, they won't be real truthful about it. And manufacturers have picked that up a long time ago. And that's why they've capitalized on that. Goodness of people. I just want people to be truthful about it, though. But anyway, some of the people out there really liked them, and luckily they were like YouTube type people and stuff too. So that helped spread it tremendously. Nobody was getting any kickbacks on anything or anything like that. And then I couldn't take the time to sell to individual people because they only want one or two slings. And you spend a half an hour or 45 minutes on doing the paperwork and the shipping and sending out something that you're barely making hardly any money on. It's just going to kill you. If you had time to do that, you'd have to take it away from the tree service, and that's just, you're going to really hurt yourself. Before all this process of getting into the rings and beginning in 2012, I prayed about it a whole lot, and I really felt that it was a direction to go into, and I ran it by my wife, and she said, let's do it. And so, and then getting back to where I was, after about 2 or 3 years, the rings are really caught on and were going, spreading so fast that it was hard for people to keep them down that wanted them kept down. I wasn't able to sell to individuals, but what I was doing, I contacted all the arbor supply places, and to make it worthwhile, I was trying to get them to buy just 50 rings at a time. Just 50 rings. And that was interesting because the two biggest ones in the industry, they were, weren't real interested in that, but, they would do it, but all the other ones wouldn't do it. They wanted like 5 rings at a time. And as they sell, then I want more because they don't want to take any risk. This thing might die out. Whatever. There's unknown. We don't want stuff on our shelves. And that's a lot with products. If they can put all the not take any risk at all. Put it all in the guy that's putting out the product, and they want to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
But Cheryl and Tree stuff, we're buying them, and just individual rings. And well, no, actually, I was selling spliced. That's right. I wasn't sure how they would splice things up, so I was confident with ABR in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So I was selling them completed slings only at first, I think it was. And then we decided to go ahead and sell individual rings at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird. There's a whole bunch of weird backstory. The ABR in Kentucky, they were helping me how to price them and stuff.
Okay.
With their experience.
Yeah.
And I did trust them, and I still think it was okay to trust them. But it really was kind of weird that I didn't know it until years later that Tree Stuff actually owned ABR. They had bought them out.
Oh, really?
So
that's a bit of a conflict of interest.
The people I was selling to was, yeah.
Okay.
So who knows? But that was kind of some of the weird things. But anyway, I was looking at my ring sales, the growth of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a money struggle the entire time, of course,
yeah.
Because you had to put money out there to get them in stock. And then, yes, you're selling them, but the next order, since you're growing, you need more rings this time.
Yeah.
So the money I made goes into the new batch, new order. Plus, I need to find other money somehow to be able to purchase enough rings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 3 or 4 week wait. Heaven forbid you try to place an order in the middle of summer with Italy. They take a month and a half off for vacation. All businesses shut down.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for at least a month. For a month, a month and a half. Theirs was always a month and a half.
Yeah.
And no exceptions, no nothing. Everybody's on vacation. Everything is shut down.
Oh, okay.
So that would even add another month and a half to your order if you, like, place it right before their vacation. The Euromarine husband and wife team was amazing. So when the rings were taken off, and it looks like I paved the road, they're being accepted.
Mm-hmm.
They're now a good product to have out there. That's when other companies decided, hey, it'd be cool to come out with a competitive ring now, a knockoff or a copy hat.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was going to happen. I was looking at my growth in sales, and Tree Stuff, sorry, it's the other tree. They placed an even bigger order than I had ever encountered. It was really big, and it made that growth graph go way up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Showing that my next order was going to have to be ridiculously huge.
Yeah.
And I sold them all my rings I had. I think, yeah. And then I contacted Euromarine and said, according to my growth, and if it keeps going this way, I need to order $90,000 worth of rings.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, my gosh, I don't know. I can't. And that was such a big jump from the previous one. I might have had maybe the most I had was like $30,000 at one time. So I didn't have that money. The business didn't have money to win. So I went to one of my best friends. And I went to my mom and said, hey, if anybody has any money and wants to make a percentage on it, here's the growth. I think in 3 months, I'll be able to pay you guys back. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of money. I'll put myself into it. Mm-hmm. I just need a little more.
Yeah.
And in 3 months, I'll be able to pay you guys back, and you'll make some good interest on it better than you could in anywhere else. And they both of them were like, yep, we'll do it.
Nice.
So I placed this order for $90,000. And probably a month go by, and my friend Lauren Schultz was living in New York City at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick from Tree Stuff would kind of talk to him every now and then and stuff, and he just popped in at his apartment, like, rang the doorbell, and I said, who's this? He's like, oh, it's Nick, I'm just passing through, I wanted to say hi.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick came up, and then he was right up there, he pulls out this bare aluminum ring. He said, look at this, man. And Lars was like, all right. He said, yeah, we're going to start making them.
Really?
Tree Stuff. And remember, they just got that huge order from me,
yeah.
And it made my gross sales look huge, and I placed a $90,000 thing.
Yeah.
So Lars was like, Nick, you know I'm really good friends with David.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah. He's like, well, as soon as you leave the apartment, I'm giving him a call.
Yeah.
He's my friend, and I'm telling him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right, whatever. I'm making short work of
yeah.
the stories, but anyway, so he calls me up, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Wow.
And I was like, well, that's so weird. Why the heck did they order so many? And I was like, what if it flops and they piss me off and I never want to sell them rings again, maybe?
Yeah.
You know, they got a lot in stock now. But I was like, oh my gosh, if theirs does well, I'm screwed. I got $90,000 to pay for, and
yeah.
So their the ABR rings, they were going pretty good. They were priced at the same price and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But shiny things are really neat. Humans like shiny things.
Yes. We're like birds,
like a,
yeah.
Like a crow or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of people didn't understand hard coat. And they were selling pretty good, and they didn't place another order with me again.
Really?
And they were my biggest buyer. They already had a lot, and Cheryl was buying them still, but anyway, I felt so terrible about not being able to pay my mom and friend back in the 3 months, like I said.
Yeah.
It went on for a year of
mm-hmm.
Not being able to pay them back, and it bothered me so much. I sold my favorite chipper. It was a Bandit 1890 heavy-duty chipper,
yeah.
You know, 20-inch logs.
Yeah.
Low hours and 250 horsepower John Deere in it, and I have to try to, as best I can,
mm-hmm.
stick up to what I said I would do. So I sold that chipper, and that guy actually ripped me off too.
Oh.
This is great. I let that go because I was so angry about it. I was going to do something to him. And then I was in church one day and it talked about forgiveness and all this. And I made a promise that I wouldn't take his legs off. That was pretty dirty. I allowed him to make payments so he could get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold it for way cheaper than I should. If I was selling it out nowadays, these things go for a fortune right now, the pre-emission ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, he asked like for the last $10,000 to make him payments, and then I've kind of forgotten a lot about it because I let it go. But
mm-hmm.
pretty much, I think he wasn't paying the last $10,000. Before he stopped making payments, he said, "Hey, I got to register this, and I got to pay tax on the sale, and this is wrong, and I should pay to Caesar what is Caesar's." He's like, could you write a bill of sale to me for a bit less than what I paid for it so I don't have to pay so much taxes? I can't afford to pay this tax.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I try to be really honest in life, honestly. But anyway, I was like, yeah, I'll write one. So I wrote a bill of sale, I think, for $10,000. I think the chipper was only... it was 30,000 or 40,000. Like I said, I've kind of flushed it out online, so
yeah.
I don't deal with it. But
yeah.
I wrote him a bill of sale, saying that it was only say I sold for 40, and I wrote it for 30,000.
Yeah.
Well, he had that proof that he only paid 30,000. That's what he's paid me so far. So
wasn't
making any more payments.
Brutal.
And I was like, oh my gosh. And I got him to pay a little bit more at one point, and then. you couldn't get, you would never respond to any phone messages, texts, emails, anything. And that's when I was just like, oh my gosh, it's so rotten.
Yeah.
Do that. And then, it's just, so it's just when it does something negative like that, it's hard to let it go. But anyway, that's another thing. But so back to the rings, so there, you know, it's borrowed from the Marine Brill, so there's no patent on or anything. And, and I paved the way to tell you they were being accepted. So then all these, so there was ABR first, and then, All Gear, and then some European ones and stuff like that. And there were just all these rings popping up.
Yep.
And right at the time I had gotten into, I had a prototype of the Safe Block.
Okay.
Which at the time I named it THT, three-hole thimble.
Okay.
That was my prototype name. Since then, another product decided to use that same name.
Yeah,
but anyway, I was, I get like a provisional patent on these things, mm-hmm. just to make sure that I got in the books that I was one that started it, so nobody else would tell me not to make.
Yeah.
Make it if they started to copy it, but yeah. And it's back to the other rings though. It's weird how so on TreeBuzz, and apparently like Facebook is really bad with people fighting and arguing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I've never been involved, never gotten into that.
Yeah.
But TreeBuzz was kind of like that too over the years.
Yeah.
And I was a bully on there a lot of times. I'm not perfect, that's for sure. And the stress of having a business, I use it for educating myself. I use it to educate others. I use it to share stuff. But the bad side of me, when the weekend came along and I had a bunch of beers on, Saturday night or something, I would get on there. And I was always been raw and open with things anyway.
Yeah.
But then you throw in drinking and throw in stress relief. I would tear people up way more than you ever should.
Yeah.
And, when you do something like that, negative things where somebody says something negative to you, that sticks with people.
Yes.
Now I'm not, regretful of pointing out unsafe things or really stupid things, or somebody is getting a teaching attitude with their video and they're just showing really ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, they get offended when I would speak up, and I'm known for that. Mm-hmm. But that stuff sticks with people, and a person wanted to monetarily be successful in products or a teaching program or anything, if somebody only cared about being successful monetarily, they would be more political and never challenge anybody, never take on things, never have a strong opinion.
Yeah.
And I just never didn't want to be like that, because I think that's false to me.
Yeah.
But it really comes back, I guess, to haunt you a bit, because there's guys that you spoke raw to, whether it was because you had too many beers or if it was because it was legit, truth, it's still they didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And man, if they have a way to come back years later to trash what product that you are trying to get out there, they will do it.
Yeah.
My closest friends are ones that I was raw and honest with and challenged, and it didn't bother them, or maybe it did at first, but then we got along, we worked it out.
Mm-hmm.
And those my closest friends in the industry that are guys that can actually handle the truth.
Yeah.
Those are really good guys, because if I was just being a political person and being nice to everybody, you don't really know who is your true friends. Yeah. A lot of times.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to be nice to everybody, and it's kind of weird because I go to expos, and these guys that have big followings and stuff, and are just one, you know, so wonderful online, and then one on one with them, you talk to them, and they're so angry and negative about people and stuff, and I think because they never let it out, they never.
Oh, okay.
Or they're always almost like in a pageant or something, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow, I didn't realize you hated this so much, or you hate that you piss you off so much. But yeah, you get with them one on one, it's like, huh, okay, so you got like a game face on in the bottom. But so anyway, yeah, and there's people that I've upset in the past, they would find each other and band together, and it was just like, oh my gosh, look at all this bashing. Oh, I know these names. Yeah, I think of way back. I know all these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, come on. just hate me if you want, but don't make up crap about a product just because I'm associated with it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but when the ABRs came out, ABR Rings came out, which was that splicing company name that I was using before.
Yep.
You see, they moved them in-house after a while.
Oh, okay.
All the original guys actually were let go.
Oh, okay.
There's a bunch. Yeah. When they came out, then all of their website, like all the black rings were disappearing on the websites and the pictures, and mm-hmm. you know, that my rings and mm-hmm. shiny ones were in there and stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's, and I put like provisional patents on a lot of the splice ideas, because it was all new stuff, that nothing had been spliced like that before, really.
Yeah.
But you can't patent splice, is what it comes out to.
Yeah.
They say, well, it's always been done somewhere before, so those configurations you can't protect.
Mm-hmm.
I gotten into, I thought, well, oh, so just backing up, this is interesting. Backing up before the ABRs even came out, I don't know if I was a year or two into the rings.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I had maybe $15,000 worth in my garage, and that was a lot for me at the time.
Yeah.
And somebody put a picture of an Antal ring up on TreeBuzz, and it's like, something like, I haven't seen this, so I'm going to go from memory from way back. And it was like, this is interesting. Looks familiar or something like that.
Okay.
And it was a large size ring, but it was Antal written on it.
Yeah.
So they were like, oh my gosh, I wonder if the X-Rings just rebranded those. And there was other rings out there in the market that were really crappy.
Mm-hmm.
Ones with seams that weren't CNC machined and stuff like that. There was some other ones out there that were in the sailing industry.
Yep.
But the Antals were the best high quality ones out there.
Okay.
Anyway, I was on TreeBuzz. This is probably 2012 or 13. And I was on TreeBuzz, and they were like, hey, X or something, is this, they didn't flat out ask it at first. There's something like, are you using this company for your rings or something? Or are these their X ring and rings? And I was like, oh my gosh. So they were questioning about the Antal rings, if the X rings were them. And I was trying to throw them off the scent, because, I thought I had so much into this, already. And if they knew that Antal was making them, that the big guys were going to go straight to Antal, and all my work would fade away.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything against the big Arbor supply companies, but I just kind of know how big business is, and it can be ruthless. So I just figured, try not to let them know where I was getting them made.
Yeah.
So I was trying to steer the guys away from it, and wasn't really answering the question. And then, a guy finally said, look, are Antal rings X-ringing rings or not? Yes or no? And I was like, yes, they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, but you're acting, you try to, you know, try to sell, act like the Intel rings must have been inferior and all this. And it just blew up. And I felt, you know, I always try to be about the honest truth about stuff and just be, but, I did try to steer them away from finding out, not the individual guys that were on there, mm-hmm. but who's going to be reading the thread.
Yeah.
And sure enough, that week, Euromarine, which is my North American contact with Italy, the North American distributor, this guy, the husband, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Siebe or something. It's S-I-E-B-E.
Yep.
I'm not familiar with that name, but he contacted me and said, David, we've got these Arbor supply companies calling us up and asking us for pricing on quantities of Antel rings.
Really?
And he's like, that's your deal, right? That's your industry, right? And I was like, yeah.
Wow.
And he was like, He said, well, they're asking for pricing and bulk pricing and stuff like that. And it was the two biggest ones in the U.S. that had contacted him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I know how much work you already put into this, and we wouldn't be selling these rings in this industry if it wasn't for you.
Yeah.
He didn't say this on the first phone call. He got information from me, and then he and his wife had discussed it, and he called me back like the next day, and he said, look, you put so much work into this, we wouldn't be selling rings in the industry if it wasn't for you. We're going to state from here on out that if anybody, any Arbor supply company, or anybody in your line of work wants to get Antel rings, that we won't sell them to them. They got to get rings through you.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, guys are, I mean, cause I'm sure they were getting like, all right, how about we buy 1,000 at a time? I mean, who knows what offers they were getting to get things. And I was just like, wow, that, and to this day, that's one of the best companies I've dealt with was Euromarine.
Yeah.
A husband and wife team, been in business for a long time, and can't say enough good about those two.
Yeah, that's integrity.
And you know, integrity doesn't really fly unless it's gonna in the business world, unless people are gonna find out about it, and then you're gonna lose sales because people get pissed off about it, then the businesses usually do it, but it usually end up making money. Antel itself, the main company, they weren't that way, really. Anybody else in any other countries that wanted them to make rings for them, they didn't feel any loyalty to me. They would make stuff or sell them Antel or sell them custom name rings, whatever you want on it.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't know much about my story, how much I put into it, like these husband and wife team did. But anyway, at that, I was also talking to I didn't like having to deal with Italy. I didn't like that they weren't really backing me up over there. They're excellent rings, and there was no flaws or there's not a problem with the width of the Antel rings. When it comes down to it in our system, almost most of us use knots, and that's going to be the weakest link versus the width of the ring. Come on.
You're talking about bend radius, right? When you say the width, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I totally agree.
Two things. You have the bend radius, which is important, but there's also the length of distance of rope that is being put under pressure.
Okay.
When you put two rings together side by side, you're only using half the bend radius on one ring and half the bend radius on the other ring.
Yep.
You put those two together, you got the same bend radius as one.
Exactly.
But why, with multiple rings, are you not being able to break the rope on multiple rings versus one and say, if that's your point in your system? And it's because it's the DMM guy backed me up at the expo 1 year. When guys said, hey, it's got the same bend radius, so multiple rings aren't doing jack crap, and you're saying it's giving you a better bang radius. And I said, well, I guess my wording is not correct then. And the DMM guy spoke up because they had just come out with his little thimbles for climbing.
Yep.
And he said, look, we found also when there's multiple thimbles, the strength goes way up.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with the length of rope that is being put under stress. So, yeah, it's not technically bend radius, but
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's the amount of rope. So
okay.
That's why, sure, multiple rings are safer than the single, but in reality, a single ring, single large or beast ring, the large ring used to be about the same width as a 3/4-inch rope.
Yeah.
It's a little bit bigger. Now that they're all, we haven't gotten to this yet, but now that they're all being made in the USA, I said, well, since we're remaking them anyway, why not just tweak things a little bit? There wasn't a flaw before, or defect, or shortcomings, but why not make them a little wider and thicker and just extremely even more robust? So that's what we did. But back to it. Where were we? Yeah, Euromarine stood up for me. Oh, I was dealing with trying to find a company to make the rings and safe block. And I think the first one I contacted was DMM because they made such beautiful stuff and are known for quality. And but they did write me back and they said, hey, we've got so many more projects on hand and we're really not interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right. So then I was at the same time I was a guy I know at Cheryl, which was the only guy I knew at Cheryl at the time. I was kind of on a friend basis with, and still am even more so. But he contacted me. It might have been 2015. Yeah, I think it was 2015. He said, David, I've never suggested this before, and I wouldn't have suggested it before because you're a friend, and I want you to treat it right. But we have at that time, he's like, we've been 4 months or something now with this new CEO of Cheryl, and he's completely changed things around. The employees love working here now, and it really looks like he tries to do the right thing and treat people right. If you ever wanted somebody to work with on your products, like the Safe Block and future ones, I think now it'd be a good company to talk to.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, okay, yeah. So I called or emailed the guy, the CEO, Tripp is his name.
Mm-hmm.
He came from Thule. They make all kinds of bike stuff, like, you know, cars. You have the bike carrying things on top of cars.
Yep.
Thule.
Yep.
He was, and I think backpacks and all kinds of stuff,
but
high quality stuff. He was with them for 10 years and did wonderful job for them. And then now he's at Cheryl. And so I called him up and said, yeah, maybe I'd be interested. I said, but I need to meet you face to face and talk to you. So I drove down there and did that. And I was super impressed with him. In one of the conference calls, I did question this guy. I was like, well, why did you contact your Marine and try to get pricing? Cut me out. And they're like, well, we got to check on pricing if we can and make sure, you know, wasn't being exaggerated to us, your pricing and stuff like that. And, and I was like, yeah, I don't know. But anyway, and I don't know if, he was there at that time. But anyway, I was really impressed with him, and I think I can help. I can figure people out pretty good if I see them face to face and talk to them. They said they would. Now Antal had made three safe. I sent a welded up prototype, the THT, to Italy. Actually, the Euromarine guy was going to head over there anyway, and so he took my prototypes. And then Antel whipped up three versions of it, and said they were interested in making them if I wanted to make it, you know, a certain number of quantity they would have to do and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I it was looking really positive with Cheryl, so we decided that. The rings, I would go with the rings and the safe block with Cheryl, and it was kind of, and then a short-term contract where either one of us could step out if we didn't like something going on.
Okay.
But a short-term contract where any of my other ideas that I want to bring to market,
mm-hmm.
I run it by them first and mm-hmm. see if they're interested. If they don't want to do it, I can still do it
okay.
with somebody else.
Yep.
And then I would get a percentage of the rings and a percentage of the safe block.
Mm-hmm.
That's worked out really well. Luckily, the timing of that was good because so many other rings started popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
That looking back on it, I think I would have just faded away.
Mm-hmm.
And in 10 years, nobody even remembered the X-Reagan rings. I think if I didn't have a big dog help me out, I think it probably would have been all for nothing, except for now people have wonderful use of redirects and other rigging tools.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have gotten any return on it
mm-hmm.
If I hadn't joined up with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they've treated me well. If they didn't, I would tell you. they've done wonderful things. And when they were getting samples made in the USA, I said, yeah, I'm all for USA made stuff mm-hmm. in our own country, but it's going to have to be the same quality, if not better. And they said, we know, it's a good name. The next rigging, we're going to keep the quality up.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, it's not going to be made. I said, you know, we're not going to make them in China. It's going to be made in the USA only. And you got to run them by me first.
Mm-hmm.
And, get my approval, and they said, yep, we totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were working on samples, and this is pretty interesting probably for you. They were having Rock Exotica cut their rings first.
Okay.
And it was pretty difficult to get that inner lip that helps lock the sling in there.
Yep.
That little lip on there is actually a difficult thing for a lot of machines to have trouble doing.
Okay.
But they were making the rings, and they don't do anodizing there, of course, but we use another business for the anodizing, and they have military grade anodizing that passes the military specs, and it'll be good.
Yep.
Well, I was getting these samples, and they weren't even black. They were dark gray and stuff.
Okay.
And some were like gunmetal gray and kind of cool looking, but,
mm-hmm.
I started using them at work, and, I was like, you know what? It's going to be a year or more of use before I know whether they're going to last. How am I going to do this?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll build a machine to run a whole bunch of rope through them. And just, you know, whatever, miles of rope.
Okay.
So I got a big electric motor I had, and I set it with a pulley sheave like on it. Put some pulley at the very end of it, and I'm not good at splicing, but I could take the climbing rope and stuff it through itself and stitch it up.
Yep.
And make a continuous loop of rope.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I would take their sample rings, and after a while, the best way was had like the upper part of the loop, all of these rings are on a board, and the leading rings are the original Antel X-Reagan rings,
mm-hmm.
Because that's going to get most of the, you know, because the rope's changing direction a little bit.
Yeah.
And once they're lined up, I'll mix in the samples, and I'll still mix in originals in the middle and all through it, and have a line of like 8 to 10 rings.
Nice.
And I was just running a half inch climbing line through it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was taking a while to get wear. It was going to take too long.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, you know what? I mean, because Why don't I speed it up? I got rubbing compound that's used for like restoring old cars, like an old dirty paint finish.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real fine grit, and it's continuous. I mean, the particles aren't different sizes in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take that stuff and smear it on the rope, and I, of course, all this is, everything I did was with cameras recording everything.
Nice.
I would stop it like every 3 minutes or something and look for wear and then start it up again.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up burning up that electric motor after a while, but getting back to it, the samples, the first samples that were supposed to be so good,
yeah,
and military grade and all that stuff, they wore through like immediately, like 2 minutes on it.
Okay.
They were worn, mm-hmm, through the hard coat, and the original X-regular rings mixed in there as control didn't have a bit of damage, none.
Yeah.
And I reported that back to them. I think they got a little bit mad, maybe. Like, well, we should know he's going to put on a machine with grit.
Yeah.
So like, hey, it didn't stand up to the originals,
yeah,
man, so it's a fail. So
yeah.
Then they get more and more and more. I think it ended up being 8 companies.
Wow.
Of hard coat before I found one. It was a cryogenics place.
Mm-hmm.
That one outlasted the original Antel rings.
Nice.
On the wear.
Nice.
And then I was like, all right, we finally have a go. And then when they were doing them, they said, David, you know, they come out in the matte black finish at first, and then they got to go through a high polishing process that takes time. And
mm-hmm,
and what do you think? Do you think the matte black would be all right or the high polished? Now, the samples I had were the high polished. And I said, hey, the rings don't have hardly any friction at all, and I'd rather have a little more, actually, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's do them in the matte black. And they're like, all right, sounds good. So they started making rings with the matte black, but then I contacted that, and they said, and meanwhile, I was still supplying, selling them Antel rings,
yeah,
as they needed them. And then I said, hey, all right, we're going to start making them in the U.S. now. They're like, yep. I said, well, we've got a little bit of a problem here. I've got like probably $50,000 or $60,000 worth of rings still in my garage. And, and he was like, oh my gosh. And he's like, well, he said, that's a heck of a burden, baby. He said, well, and he got back to me. He's like, you know what? Well, we'll buy them all from you, and we'll make all of those go out first.
Wow.
We'll take them off your hands. I think over is like a year period or something. They bought big batches,
yeah,
and even though they didn't need them at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another wonderful thing they did.
Yeah.
Cheryl did. And it's just weird that when they've treated me so well that you hear people bash them and say they're just a big evil thing. And yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the head guy that's running it. Everybody else has to follow kind of their way of how they do things. But I think that this new guy has been really great for the business.
Mm-hmm.
And then meanwhile, with the tree stuff, and it blew up on Tree Buzz at one point when ABRs came out.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of supporters of me spoke up and started a thread, and it bashing them for putting out a knockoff product after all the work I did and all that. And I was so thankful to for these guys doing that and speaking up for me. And I would put in a little bit of information, and that was another bad time where I kind of wanted to just put all out there, all the broken promises and emails and all of the stuff,
mm-hmm,
with dealing with them. Another big one was when they started putting the shiny ones in all the pictures. I was like, "What's the deal, man? Why are you doing this?" And And then they had a talk, and their head splicers, he said, Luke said, the head splicers and I had a big talk. You did put a lot into this. All of the original configuration slings that you and ABR came up with, we're going to not sell ABR rings in those ever. It'll always be X-Reagan rings.
Nice.
Due to your time that you put into it. And, actually, he said that when I kind of backed, not kind of, I backed people off of them on Tree Buzz, and that was due to August Honeybee talking to me and telling me to take the high road. Mm-hmm. I was looking to him for advice. Mm-hmm. I wanted to just tear him up.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to take the high road, which I don't know if it's a high road now, because I don't know if he even agrees. But anyway, I mean, why not just have facts out there? I don't know. But anyway, yeah. I backed everybody off of him, which was kind of crappy because these guys were all supporting me. And behind closed doors, I was thanking the guys and kind of even egging them on, honestly. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I tell them to back off. Mm-hmm. And that was really crappy. I think I'd like to go back to that thread and apologize to those people that were backing me up, and I backed them off because I thought it was the right thing to do. I don't know if it is or not. I had that nice thing where they said they were going to only have X-Reagan rings in all the configurations that you had brought to the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up, 2.5 months later, I started seeing all the black rings disappear in the pictures again, and I wrote them. I said, "What's going on, guys? You're going all back to the ABR stuff again. You promised that you would have X-Reagan ring." "Oh yeah, well, we heard you're going to be working with Cheryl now, and they're going to be doing a safe block, and we don't want to buy another thing from them if we can help it. And we're not going to do that now." I was like, "What?" Hmm. And they're like, "Yeah." Wow. I mean, it's real matter of fact. Like, "Yeah, you're going to work with them, so." It's off.
So much for the handshake, eh?
And it even said, "I'm not going to follow." And I was like, "The double-headed B string is all ABR now too, man."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "That was totally ours." And he was like, "Yeah, we're not going to." He even said, the wording was like, "Yeah, I'm not going to keep that promise now."
Wow.
Just like, whoa,
crazy.
It is so weird because. As a tree service, I dealt with these companies, and so many times, like that company, it felt like they were friends.
Mm-hmm.
I'd call them on a cell phone when something broke or something. I needed something. I didn't need a part number or anything. They'd look it up, and they'd order it for me while I'm working on the job and for years. And but you don't know about people. Treating everybody like a friend helps with sales. So
yeah.
When it comes down to, I mean, so they have motivation to be that way. So you don't really see the true colors of somebody until it comes down the other way where, well, screwing you over makes us money. So
yeah.
Then you start to see the real colors of people. Money does love a lot. Anyway, maybe it's a little bit too much to hear. So anyway, we get back to, and then other stuff like that. Like, one time I was, somebody saw pictures of me on a video and I had an all gear climbing line.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody asked on the forum or on YouTube, I think it was Tree Bugs Forum. They said, "Hey David, how do you like that line?" And I had a paragraph I wrote back. I said, "Actually, this line I don't like at all.
Mm-hmm.
It melted in my spider jacks. It glazed the first week of using it.
Mm-hmm.
It continues to glaze. It's not holding up. I had gotten samples of all their ropes, and this one felt so good in my hands, and I thought it was just looked like it was going to be a good rope, but it's not. It's not working out with the spider jack. It's melting it. It's fraying. I'm not happy with it at all. I will," and I went on to say, "I've used their rigging ropes. I use Samson and Augie's rigging ropes,
yeah.
And their rigging ropes have been great over the years. They hold up.
Mm-hmm.
They don't cost as much, but they do hold up. And I so I tried to throw something positive in there too. It was my real opinion. They asked me my opinion.
Yeah.
And then, and I was buying a wholesale rope from Augier at the time, because I had set up the Harbor Supply Company, and then they came out. I see these blue Augier rings pop up and rigging rings.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that's weird. I had a relationship with these guys, and I was like, guys, why didn't you? You didn't even ask about, I mean, you do splicing and rope. You've never gotten into hard, you know, products. And how come you never reached out and said, hey, what could you supply us? What are some prices to supply us with rings?
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy with Augier goes, well, you talked bad about our rope. You said that you don't like our rope. So we figured you'd never want our rope in any of your products. And I was like, what? I said the rigging ropes are good. I didn't like the climbing rope. But big deal. Yeah. He's just like, yeah, screw you. You talk bad about a product. So
we're
going to get you now.
Cutthroat, eh?
Crazy. I guess.
Crazy.
So, and then just in other little sort of, like, it's weird. American Arborist in Pennsylvania. I always drove up there and, did business with them since the beginning of that trade service.
Mm-hmm.
And they were carrying the X-Rigging rings for a while. And then as soon as they heard I was going to help, you know, be with Cheryl, they pulled them all off. They didn't sell them anymore. And they started carrying Augier. And I was like, why, guys? I had thousands and thousands of dollars of products I bought from you, especially all my cabling stuff, everything. It's just thousands. It really is.
Yeah.
Over, you know, from 1995 to probably 2015.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can't. He's like, oh no, you're with the big shell company now. We're not going to carry them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, look, they're the company for Silky. All your Silky products have to come from them. You sell Silky. You sell ART stuff, all that comes through them. They're the North American distributor for that.
Mm-hmm.
And why not get the rings? They're like, nah, one less, you know, everybody's like, oh, one less product we have to get from the big guy, the better. It's like, no, thanks a lot. You're not supporting me at all. Always, all right. It's odd. But anyway.
So what's the current 2019 state of affairs with rings and your company? So they're all made in the States.
And actually, I'm glad. We did have that wonderful hard tin we found, and they were Rock Exotic was making them.
Mm-hmm.
They had a hard time keeping up with the numbers and the cost. They weren't really making much of anything on them.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually, it worked out good. I like Rock Designer tremendously. Mm-hmm. This guy's great.
Mm-hmm.
But actually all the current safe block and rings are made at, Harkin Marine.
Oh, okay.
Harkin is a huge, marine product company that's been around, I think since 1950 or something.
They make the winch on the GRCS, right?
Correct, the winch on the GRCS, and they do all the hard coating is in house because they have tons of marine products that need that wonderful coating to protect them from salt water.
Okay.
So they're just experts on that as well,
mm-hmm.
and the quality is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And they went more to a more polished look.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the matte finish for sure made them wear faster, but we started to get you really didn't get complaints on the X-Rigging rings. Once I found out there was something worn through or something, and usually then you found out it was mud, sand, or they were extreme terrible conditions where a vehicle was pulling logs up a road, up a hill or something.
Yeah.
But and it was hard to mix in what's real, what somebody just wanted to take a shot at them and mm-hmm. blow up some, you know, some news on it. And it was really good when I was getting started, when people were starting to tear, you know, trying to go at them. Other people in the industry, Reg Coates and a bunch of people contacted me and said, hey, this is what happens, especially if something's successful and changing things. He said, somebody described it like a bunch of crabs, bunch of live crabs in a basket, like a bushel basket.
Mm-hmm.
And when one crab is trying to climb up and he's going to get out because it's not hard for him to get out, but crabs will grab a hold of him, pull him back down to the bottom, and none of them get out.
That's
they all just it was some analogy like that, and I was like, ah.
Yeah, I've heard that.
They see you're just a, you know, you're just a tree guy just like them. So how dare you get in and maybe get maybe make some revenue off of some products or something? So yeah, there was that's kind of weird with the human element there. So Harkin is making the rings and safe block now. I've got some prototypes of other things made that are kind of along the same lines.
Nice.
For rigging, but I've got some other things on paper and partially made prototypes that are, I think, they've been with me a long time now that I think are going to be absolutely huge.
Nice.
Like what I said, I went with the simplest thing first, jump into the water with, which was a product that was already basically out there but not in the industry. And that I'm glad I started with something simple because that was a heck of a struggle as it was, as you can see. The money stress and all of that. Still not really making much money off of it. The royalties are starting finally to be decent. And that's nice extra revenue coming in. It's definitely a good thing to do. It was definitely some stressful years.
I can't thank you enough for bringing that product, just the rings, not even thinking about the safe block, which is that's another podcast that we could do just about the safe block. But I mean, rings just completely changed rigging for me, and I can't get enough of them. I was kind of a late adopter to rings, but once I got into them, wow, they just took over in my tree work and rigging and setups, and it just fundamentally changed everything. So I can't thank you enough for you know, taking on all that stress and pushing through those barriers. You know, I really feel like you're on the right side of history on this issue, and you know, especially with this podcast getting out there and the real story of how it all went down. You know, you're going to feel a lot of support. I guarantee it. So thank you so much.
Thanks for saying that. another little offshoot that I didn't ever even think of until a splicing business, said it to me. It's probably the Fizz and Fibers guy. He said, you know, with the rings, you know, splicing wasn't that, there wasn't that many people doing it. People did it for themselves and stuff, but there wasn't all of these classes and all these little businesses and all that. And he said, you know, we really think you are the person to thank for that with the rings, because it gave so many different configurations and options, and brought so much interest that he said the splicing industry is just blown up now because of the rings. And I was like, wow, that's cool. It's totally true.
Cause splicing was very small, you know, it was climbing lines and eyes on lanyards and stuff, but now it's this huge industry. Like I talked to Peter DeVries on the podcast, and you know, it's amazing how much of a thing it's become. And it was the rings that drove that. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Well, listen, David, this has been absolutely amazing. I could talk to you for hours and pick your brain. I would actually, in the future, I would love to do another podcast at some point, if you'd be up for that.
All right. Sounds good. I like what you're doing. You've got a great, I tell you, I've listened to a lot of your other ones, and you've got a great radio voice for this. So you're blessed with that, that's for sure. But
I have a face for radio.
I listened to the Kevin Bigham one. I listened to August Haneke one. I didn't finish that one because I knew all of his stories pretty much. It was kind of just stuff I already knew. You want them, and then the value offering the quality with your company and not just pricing on hour and all that stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of good information people should check out on there.
Well, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate that. What is the best way for people to connect with you online?
It's extremely hard to get.
Is it? Okay.
The best way right now is probably Instagram. But, you know, there'll be private messages in there that I go on, and I'm busy, and I'm like, no, I want to click on that when I'm in the office and I can write down something, because if I just read it while I'm working, I'm probably going to forget about it.
Yeah.
So I'll save those. Mm-hmm. And then they get saved for so long, and now I'm finding it out. They, like, they disappear after a while.
Yes,
if they
go.
For.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I knew I had a whole bunch on there when I said I was going solo, and people were contacting me to help, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there was three or four on there, and I left them so I could read them when I read. And I clicked on some more private messages, and it wasn't those guys. It was all disappeared. So apparently I never even got to read. But Instagram, DXManJDD.
Okay.
John David Driver. DXManJDD on Instagram.
Perfect.
I don't read my emails in a timely manner at all. I don't, almost, it'd be 6 months to a year before I check the private messages and tree buzz, stuff
yeah.
like that.
Okay.
So, sorry.
Okay. Awesome. So I will put links to all of that stuff on the show notes page as well. So yeah, thanks a lot for doing this. And thanks for everything that you're doing for the industry.
Thank you, Patrick.
Right on, brother. All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Wow, that was so good. You know, because it has taken so long to set this up, like I told you at the beginning, I felt at times like I'm an investigative journalist, you know what I mean? Like tracking down leads and trying to get this story out into the hands of people. So that was so much fun. Thank you so much, David, for coming on the show. So yeah, as I mentioned, I will put links to all the stuff that we talked about on the show notes page, and that will be available at educatedclimber.com/ecpodcast. So, wow, that was such a good conversation. I could literally talk to him for hours and hours and hours, and I actually had to shut it down early there because the kids were screaming in the background. I don't know if you can hear it on the microphone, and the dog was barking, and oh, that was so good. So, Climber Nation, thank you so much for your attention. Thank you so much for listening to this show. It means the world to me. If, as I always like to ask, if you're getting value out of this show, please tell a friend. And until next time, climb high, work smart, and read more. Tree Mugs out.
The Educated Climber Podcast.
The show for arborists, tree climbers, and entrepreneurs who make their living in the canopy.
Climb high, work smart, read more.